Good to see each one here tonight. We are grateful for your presence. Tonight we continue our study through the Old Testament, book by book. And we come to the book of Daniel. Somebody accused me tonight of wanting to talk about my son. Assured them that wasn't the case. I'm going to talk about Tim Hadamer's son tonight. No, tonight we are going to talk about the prophet Daniel. This is the final book of what we commonly call the major prophets in the way we generally divide our Old Testament and categorize them. It is interesting that Daniel is classified as one of the major prophets, even though comparatively speaking by the writings of the rest of the major prophets, his book is rather short. It's only 12 chapters long, but there is a major amount of content that is found within the book of Daniel. And there are a lot of things to discuss this evening as we examine this particular letter. And it is truly one of my favorite books of the Old Testament because there are so many relevant things that are found, so many relevant lessons that can be found in the book of Daniel. There certainly is no shortage of interesting material within the book of Daniel. And there is a great deal that we need to learn from these 12 chapters. The writer of the book is Daniel, based upon a number of different factors internally and externally. We know that to be the case. It was written to the Jews who were in Babylon. It was written, and later Persia. It was written to those that were in and a part of the captivity. When it was written was about 536 to 533 BC. That doesn't mean the entirety of the content was written at that time. But we do know that it was being written all the way up until that time. Because by the time you reach Daniel chapter 6, notice I didn't say Daniel chapter 12, though that we'll talk about that in a minute. But by the time you reach Daniel chapter 6, you're already through the years of the Babylonian Empire, and you're into the years of the Medo-Persian Empire. And so you don't have this great amount of detail about all of the 70 years of captivity. Even though Daniel chapter 1, Daniel's going to be carried away in the first carrying away of the people in 606 BC. And you're going to have him at 536 BC still being present in the court of Darius the Mede at that particular time. And so Daniel is going to cover a breadth of time and distance in a very short space. Instead of having a lengthy narrative about all of the things that transpire, Daniel is going to be about key events in certain areas over the course of his work as a prophet and over the course of the history of Israel's time in Babylon and in captivity, and some things that are going to be discussed as we get deeper into our study this evening. What is the purpose of the book of Daniel? There are a lot of different ways that you could approach it. I've actually given four different purposes or four different factors to the writings of the book of Daniel. First of all, I think part of the reason is to encourage the Jews to resist the evil and idolatrous forces in Babylon. You're going to see multiple occasions where Daniel is going to have to stand tall against the idolatrous background of the Babylonian people, even from the very first chapter, when he has to refuse to eat the king's meat and to drink the king's drink because it would violate the law in order to do so. All the way over to chapter 6, where you're going to have an issue with Daniel continuing to pray to God after the king has been tricked into making this edict that nobody can inquire anything of anybody except the king for 30 days. And so being able to resist the evil and idolatrous forces of Babylon. Secondly, the book is intended to give a model of righteousness as seen in the life of Daniel and his three companions, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Wait a second, we don't know them by those names generally, do we? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There we go. The Babylonian names that they were given are what we generally understand them or recognize them as. Third, when you look at the book of Daniel, you cannot talk about the book of Daniel without talking about the giving of prophecy and visions of basically the entire time from the time of Daniel to the time of the Messiah. One of the most interesting aspects in studying the book of Daniel is that in the latter half of the book of Daniel, God gives through Daniel prophetic messages that are going to relate to every empire of the world from Daniel's time all the way to the time of Christ. It's going to cover things that happened in Palestine, things that are going to happen with the rise and fall of Alexander the Great, and so many other things that are going to transpire in world history from the time of Daniel to the time of Jesus are foretold in the prophecies of Daniel. And they're foretold in very vivid and illustrative detail in the things that Daniel is going to record. And so Daniel is going to give detailed prophecies of the time leading up to the coming of the Messiah. But ultimately, you also have within Daniel the design to portray the triumph of the kingdom of God. And the triumph of God in every aspect of things. You know, you go turn over, as we're going to see, or as we're going to talk about a little bit later, you turn over to chapter 4, and you have the impact of Daniel's statement that the Lord rules in the kingdoms of men. He is the one that is in control. And that ultimately his kingdom will reign supreme over them all. When you look at the outline of the book, you can really break down the book into two parts. The first is chapters 1 through 6, which is Daniel's biography, but little of it we have, and the events that take place in Babylon. And so in chapters 1 through 4, you have the things that transpire under King Nebuchadnezzar. In chapter 5, you have the things that take place under Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, or rather great-grandson, Belshazzar, that are going to take place. And then you have, in chapter 6, with Daniel in the lion's den, what takes place in the days of Darius the Mede. You have the historical aspects in many ways. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. In chapter 7 through 12... you have visions and prophecies concerning the world kingdoms and the kingdoms of Christ. And these are going to be given in different time periods. You're going to have these prophecies that come in the days of Belshazzar in chapter 7 and 8. You're going to have prophecies in the days of Darius in chapter 9. And then in the days of Cyrus the Persian king in chapters 10 through 12. And so you have this wide variance of the information that is given and the time frame in which it is given. And even the king who is in charge when it's given. And so you're going to have a lot of different elements that are going to come into play as the book progresses and as the different elements of the book progress. When we examine the book of Daniel, what are some things that are helpful hints to the book? And I kind of have gone through a little bit of the earlier things so rather quickly to get into some of this latter material, which is where we're going to spend the bulk of our time this evening. The book of Daniel has two parts. We just talked about them and kind of broke them down. But if you'll notice, as we talked about it, and if you've read the book of Daniel or spent much time studying Daniel, you realize that chapters 1 through 6 is more historical narrative, though there are prophetic elements to it. And chapters 7 through 12 are deep and heavy prophetical material, even though there's some historical material that is sprinkled in there. But if you really look at the book of Daniel, you really have two books rolled into one, or two sections rolled into one. The first is telling you historical accounts. So in chapter 1, you have Daniel being taken into Babylon. And the situation with the eating of the king's meat. And the test that takes place there. In chapter 2, you have Daniel going and saving the king's advisors, as it were, by being able to interpret the king's dream that he has in chapter 2. In chapter 3, you have the deliverance of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they refuse to bow down to the idolatrous image that Nebuchadnezzar creates, that 90-foot structure image that he creates. And then in chapter 4, you have Nebuchadnezzar being thrust out of his own palace and sent out to act like a wild animal for a period of time to put him back in his place by God. Then in chapter 5, you have the fall of Babylon in the days of Belshazzar. We often title chapter 5, the handwriting on the wall, because of what God does in making that prophetic statement to Belshazzar in the midst of the feast. And then in chapter 6, you have Daniel in the lion's den. By the way, quick side note. Most of the time when you see the images of Daniel in the lion's den, what do we generally see? He's a relatively young, pretty good-looking guy stuck in a den full of lions. Folks, by the time Daniel goes in the lion's den, he is approximately 90 years of age. He's no spring chicken. He has survived nearly 70 years of captivity at that particular time. Daniel is an old man, not a young man, by the time we come to Daniel chapter 6. Daniel is a man who is well seasoned in what it means to serve God and to put Him first no matter what the king says who's in charge. Those are the first 6 chapters. A lot of historical narrative that takes place, telling about events that transpired over those 70 years. But then you get into chapters 7 through 12, and it is a constant stream of visions and prophecies that take place. In chapter 7, you have the vision of the 4 beasts. In chapter 8, you have the vision of the ram and the goat. In chapter 9, in the days of Darius, you're going to have the prophecy of the 70 weeks that is going to take place. In chapter 10, you have the vision of the glorious man. In chapter 11, you have the warring nations that are going to be described. And then in chapter 12, you have more prophecies that Daniel is going to give at the very end. And the sealing of the book as it's described in chapter 12. You couldn't get 2 more different sections of the book of Daniel than what you have. And yet, they also are ones that really help describe the 2 sides of Daniel. On the one hand, you have a man in Daniel who is going to rise to be one of the main governors in a land that is not his own. He is going to be one who answers only to the king himself for a long period of time while he is in captivity, much the same as Joseph in the land of Egypt many centuries before him. And yet at the same time, he is going to be the man that God is going to use to lay the foundation for all that is to come over the next few centuries. You know, we often talk about the period between the Old Testament and New Testament as being the period in which God was silent. That is and isn't accurate. We don't have a lot of new revelation, or we don't really have any new revelation that takes place in those 400 years. But that doesn't mean God didn't have anything going on and didn't know what was going on, because He'd already told everything that was going to go on during that time period and laid it out ahead of time to prepare the way. But not only do we have these 2 sections of the book, But if you'll notice, as we've already talked about, we have chapter 1 that is going to take place at the first year of the captivity. You're going to have chapter 6 that's going to take place toward the very end of the captivity. And so you also recognize that the book of Daniel is not written in a chronological order, specifically. It is interesting, however, to note that if you take the information found in the book of Daniel, each of the sections of Daniel are presented chronologically. And that if you move them one over the other, you do get a chronological layout to the book of Daniel. So if you ever feel the need, and actually it's one of my favorite ways to study the book of Daniel, it is a very interesting study to go through Daniel chronologically. Now to do so, you do it this way. You begin with chapters 1 through 4. They are the first sections of the book of Daniel. Then you jump forward to chapters 7 and 8, which are the first sections of the prophetic statements of Daniel. Then you come back and pick up chapter 5. Jump forward and pick up chapter 9. Back again for chapter 6. And then forward for chapters 10 through 12. That's Daniel in chronological order. And it's interesting to see some of the nuances of the things that are discussed, both from the historical and the prophetic side, when you analyze it that way. So maybe something to do when you have one of those off days where there's nothing going on and you can just sit down and read through it that way, or study through it that way. It is an interesting study, and it is one that is beneficial. But also, when we're examining the book of Daniel, we need to understand that Daniel's prophecies are going to foretell the events of the world empires from his time to the coming of Jesus. Daniel's emphasis, for the most part, is going to fall into that central area. Daniel is not going to spend a great deal of his time talking about things that are coming way on down to us. Daniel's purpose is more specific than that. And so when you see in Daniel chapter 2, the prophecy of the Nebuchadnezzar's dream and the four kingdoms that are going to come, and then you get to verse 44 in the midst of that fourth and final kingdom, which is Rome, by the way, no matter what the premillennialist tries to say. He says, in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Speaking of the kingdom of Christ, the church that is going to be established. You're going to see very much the same style of prophecy with different characters in Daniel chapter 7. You're going to see elements in the rest of the prophecies of Daniel, where there's going to be a lot of details concerning the situation between the Persians and the Medes, the rise of Alexander the Great, and then the breaking apart of Alexander's kingdom into the four generals and their groups as Greece breaks down. You're going to see a lot of different things in the books of Daniel, or in the chapters of Daniel, in the prophecies of Daniel, that are going to lay out the future history of the empires of the world leading up to the time of Christ. We need to recognize that Daniel's prophecies are going to foretell events that have already taken place, and that took place before the time of Jesus, leading up to the time of Jesus and introducing the days of Jesus. When it comes to the book of Daniel, what are some lessons that we need to learn from the book? And while we can talk about a lot of the different aspects of the prophecies, we can't get into them in enough detail this evening to really enhance a lot of things the way that we would need to. So I'm going to hone in a little bit more on the narrative portion of the book of Daniel as we pull the lessons out this evening. Three different things that I pulled from the book of Daniel. First of all, we need to learn the lesson from the book of Daniel that character counts. When you look into chapter 1, it would have been easy, would have been simple to just follow along with everybody else and do what everybody else was doing. When it came to the presentation of the king's meat and all of these other things, and to just go with the flow and not make waves. But Daniel has a character that will not allow him to violate the law of God and to betray his own conscience. Daniel is going to be rewarded for his devotion, both in the eyes of the people of Babylon and in the eyes of God. You turn forward into chapter 4, or rather chapter 3, and you have the character of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in their unwillingness to bow before the image and to bow before the idol that Nebuchadnezzar is going to build. And in chapter 3, you see the character that they have when they stand before Nebuchadnezzar in verse 16, and they say, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." God can deliver us from this, and we have confidence that he will, they say. But even if he doesn't, we're still not serving your God. We're still not going to follow him. Character counts. They will be delivered from the fiery furnace because of their faith. In the second place, when you examine the book of Daniel, you see a number of instances of the importance of courage when it comes to God's people. Obviously, in chapter 3, when you're dealing with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we see the importance of having the courage to stand up for what is right. But certainly nowhere is that detailed in any more vivid way than in chapter 6 when you deal with Daniel in the lion's den. The fact that courage is necessary for us to be a child of God. We have to be willing to stand up for what is right. We have to be willing to stand up even when the world around us is trying to put us in positions to fail. We still have to make the stand. We still have to be willing to do what God wants over what man wants. And so we see the importance of courage in the people of God. And certainly that courage is exemplified in the life of Daniel. In the third place, when you examine the book of Daniel, you find that God is in control in the framework of man and the nations. You see it in God's relationship with Nebuchadnezzar in the first four chapters. How that God is going to lay before Nebuchadnezzar the things that are going to happen. God is going to show Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 4 that he is the one that is really in control. Nebuchadnezzar thinks he's in control. Nebuchadnezzar thinks he is so great and that he is so powerful and that he can do whatever it is that he wants to do. And God is going to give him a very clear illustration of just how little power Nebuchadnezzar has in the grand scheme of things. It's interesting to note that the things that are stated in chapter 4, it's one of the interesting nuances of Daniel's account, the things of chapter 4, especially the first two-thirds of the chapter, are actually declared in written letter form by Nebuchadnezzar himself. Chapter 4, verse 1 begins, "Nebuchadnezzar, the king, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in the earth." This is Nebuchadnezzar's letter that he wrote to his people after he returned, describing what it was that took place. And then Daniel's statement beginning in going down through the end, verse 37, Nebuchadnezzar ends it and says, "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways justice, and those who walk in pride he is able to put down." God is in control. And isn't that the message of chapter 7 through 12, when God lays out the things that are going to happen and that are going to transpire? The different nations that are going to rise and fall, and the kings that are going to surge and recede over the face of the earth over the next few hundred years. That ultimately, as God puts it to Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 4, verse 17, "In order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men." Ultimately, God is in control. And God is still in control. God is still just as much in control today as he was in the days of the Old Testament. Now, he may work by different manners. He may set out his objectives by different means, but he's still the one in control, even today. There are many great lessons to pull from the book of Daniel. There's a great deal of material that could be covered, a great deal of time that needs to be invested and could be invested in the things that Daniel has to say. It is a very interesting book. There are sections that are rather difficult when it comes to the book of Daniel. There's no doubt about that. Especially in the areas of the prophetic elements in the latter half of the book. But they can be followed, and they can be understood. The book of Daniel lays a great message before a people in captivity of what it means to be faithful to God, and to recognize that ultimately, he's the one in charge. There's one here tonight that needs to respond to the invitation that the Lord always presents and is always available. Whether it be in needing to be obedient to the gospel by means of faith, repentance, confession, and immersion in water. Or maybe needing prayers from the church, encouragement, strength, or to repent and get back in a right relationship with God. If we can assist you in any way this evening, would you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?